Stormwater, Margie, do you want to wait till we get to that? Or do you want to speak regardless, Margie? Okay. Yeah, I think it's better than... Okay, okay. All right. Just want to make sure. All right, if I can, well, welcome to our village board meeting. It's 7 o'clock. It's March 13th, and I'll ask the clerk to please take the roll call.
Excuse me. Trustee Johnson? Trustee Brennan?
Here.
Trustee Vasquez?
Here.
Trustee Gillis? Trustee Bachner?
Here.
Trustee O'Connell?
Here.
Thank you. All right, if I can ask everyone to please stand for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the Republic, which is a nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, so we'll go ahead and we've got a few comments, some on traffic and some on TIF. So we will take, huh? Oh, Lisa's here. 7 o'clock, right on the button. Okay. Catherine, are you here for traffic or for TIF? Burn, yeah. Traffic?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So I'll put them in categories. That's why don't we do, it sounds like it looks like only one for Madison TIF. So Debbie, do you want to?
Again, for welcoming me to speak at the board. I feel like I should have a nameplate. I just have a few quick questions. I know I only have 5 minutes. Hopefully I'll take less than that amount of time, but there was an item late in the agenda concerning the demolition, so I thought this would be a good time to raise some of our outstanding questions. So we would just like to have an update on some of the different aspects of the ongoing demolition and abatement. The first question we have is in terms of the award, which I think you're going to be discussing as item number 10, we were just wondering how long the bidding was open for that abatement. Our second question is, once the abatement contract is awarded, when would that project commence and how long would it take? Our third question is, after the abatement is rectified, when would the building demolition resume and how long would that take?
Mm-hmm.
My ongoing personal question is, what is the status of the preservation stained glass if we've got someone to take that? We wondered in terms of the permits expiring for 10 Lathrop and 11 Ashland to be demolished, if that permit had been reapplied for and what the timeline was for the demolition of those two homes. And in conjunction with that, when the protection would begin in terms of the adjacent aspect to the homes. Also adjacent to that, we had discussed with Matt Walsh in January some dates for a neighbor meeting prior to the demolition of 10 Lathrop and 11 Ashland and wanted to revisit that scheduling and see when we would be able to get that meeting on our agenda. Switching gears from that, but in the same realm, we have some, we had submitted a FOIA request last week, week before. And we did receive some documents, but the documentation was incomplete. Some of the questions we asked included the dates of the county and state inspections, which the village indicated were performed during the abatement from time to time during the initial period that was in November of 2022.
Mm-hmm.
And then finally, and I think this was also in writing, but I wanted to ask again if we could circle back and request the name of the third party site supervisor who would be on, hopefully, I would assume, both for the demolition and for the abatement. So those are the questions regarding the demolition. I have two questions that are related, and that is we wanted to get an update on the canceled EDC meeting. When the new date of that meeting would be. The meeting was canceled for a lack of quorum on March 5th, according to the website, the next meeting would be April 5th. I did not see, when I last checked anyway, an agenda. Don't know if our issue would be up for that meeting or what, if it would be later. And then finally, I wanted to follow up with Matt, who is trying to obtain the names of the five or six developers that John Housel noted that he consulted with in terms of the ideas for rezoning. We initially heard about that on February 22nd, requested the names of the developers that he spoke with on February 24th by email. And I last heard from Matt on February 28th that he had not yet obtained that information from John Housel, but had asked for that. So that is all that I have for tonight.
Yep.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Debbie. And I think a lot of these questions will get talked about and discussed on 10-8. Okay, so we'll go ahead and Jack. I want to mispronounce your name. I'm sorry. Now at the end or not?
Lesniak.
Okay, thank you.
I live on Bonnie Bray between Lemoyne and Greenfield, and I'm here to speak about the traffic barriers that have been put up in the community. I guess despite the current blockade of our streets, we have eastbound North Avenue drivers taking shortcuts to make turns south on Harlem Avenue, probably turning at Lathrop and filtering down to the Harlem to continue south on Harlem. The current traffic situation at Lemoyne and Greenfield does not correct this. It encourages it. I don't know what would, maybe signage on North Avenue with no right turn from 4 to 7 p.m. from Lathrop all the way east to Harlem. But this is not a singular community in the middle of a suburban sprawl. It is an urban community that needs to interact with its surrounding neighbors. As it is now, if you are coming from the east or the north, or even the south on Harlem Avenue, you're not welcomed into River Forest. Next steps would be barriers on all streets fronting North Avenue and Harlem. This would effectively create a barrier to Oak Park, which would negate any reference to anything starting with Oak Park, River Forest. My suggestion is to drop back to the initial traffic study, which I believe cost taxpayers money, and implement the plan of the professionals. It is a simple set of changes to be implemented during high traffic periods, not a set of 24/7 barriers that changes the quality of our existence. Another comment, I don't think there's much justification in mentioning children's safety versus traffic. River Forest is not known, by my observation, to have children playing on their front lawns, let alone on the street. Speed bumps, stop signs, and strategic times signage would be a better start, not barriers that separate us from our friends in other communities.
Thank you, Jack. Within 5 minutes. If I can ask Catherine to please come.
Hello, I'm Catherine Byrne again. Just talking about the Northeast Quadrant and River Forest, and we had sent a letter to Matt. I just spoke to him prior to the meeting to just wonder when we were going to get our request back. We also sent a FOIA request, so I just wanted to put on the record that it's out there and we're just looking for a response.
Okay, Marianne Fisher.
I'm so slow. I'm Marianne Fisher, and I've been a resident of River Forest for probably 40 years, but I've lived on Harlem on the 1400 block for 32 years, and I agree with Jack. Those barriers look ridiculous, and if you can't read, get a ticket. I don't understand the barrier thing. You know, and even though he was saying about the one-way traffic and that, and I just don't know what sparked all that. I didn't ever find that there was a problem. So that's all I wanted to say.
Okay. Just so FYI as well, Mary Ann, the current barriers are just temporary. That's why they look kind of, yeah. No, I know, it's winter, so it's hard to do construction during that time. So, but duly noted.
Construction during the winter.
Hold on. Does it mean
that you have already decided to pour concrete in there to remove the plastic? Because, I mean, then that, what's the point?
Well, it's not just hard, but it's also, it needed to be budgeted and the budget needed to be approved.
So you have already budgeted it?
Yes.
So it means that it's going to be done?
Well, I'm not saying, it was voted on, as I mentioned before, it was voted on.
So what's the point of having a meeting on March 15?
If you could please give me your public comment.
Yes, that was one of the points, though. What's the point of having a meeting on March 15? If you have already budgeted it. You know, several people have been speaking about the condition of the alleys and that there's a lot of traffic in the alleys, etc. So what I wanted to show you tonight are 8 photographs that I've taken with my camera, okay? And I've taken these photos in a span of 10 minutes. Now, I have put post-it notes on each photo because my camera has the time and the day, and I put a post-it note to make it visible to the people who are not so close. But I have my camera with me. Anyone who wants to check that I made any mistake is very welcome to do so. So the first, there are 2 types of problems that have the place where I live. So this is a Clinton. And this is the partial cul-de-sac. And these are the alleys. So the first problem, and 1657, you know, Italian time. So a car coming south on Clinton from North Avenue completely ignores the no entry and just keeps going, okay? So, and this happens all the time, not only with cars. I've seen Amazon trucks, I've seen FedEx, I've seen UPS, I've seen everything. Everything that is squeezed through will go through. And it's not very good, okay? Because if a car is coming the other way, this is an accident waiting to happen. Mm-hmm. So this is a problem. The other problem is shown in all the other... just showing the cars that are going from one side of the alley to the other side of the alley, down from North Avenue onto the alley, crossing Clinton to the other side of the alley, etc. And this is the time when this happened. So this has all happened in the span of 10 minutes. There are 7 cars going from the east side to the west side of the alley or vice versa. Now, 7 cars in 10 minutes makes approximately 1 car every 1.5 minutes. And I would like to remind everyone here that one of the reasons why these things were set up in the first place was because people on Bonnie Bray complained that 1 car every 3 minutes was too much, was terrible, and was a lot. These were their words. Okay, so the other thing is that Bonnie Bray is a street that, according to IDOT, can support at least 1,000 cars a day. These are alleys. They are narrow. They are not built for this kind of traffic, which is higher than the one it was on Bonnie Bray. And another problem, part of the east side of the alley is paved with bricks. The west side of the alley is paved with bricks and concrete, which means that those poor people who live on the alley all day long have to hear the noise of cars bumping on the bricks. So, you know, I still have to understand what kind of mitigation this is. I've been emailing a gentleman on Bonnie Bray who is very supportive of all these barricades and the blockades and this stuff. And he told me many times by email by email only. So he wrote it to me several times. Why do I make so much noise? Why am I so upset? Because after all, going with the barrier, my commute will increase just 1/10 of a mile. So he said to me this over and over again. And, you know, I told him it's not a question of 1/10 of a mile. The point is that all the cars that should be on Clinton or another way now are going to be dumped on Williams or Division because the cars have to go somewhere. And his answer was, and I have it, well, would you rather have the cars on your street or on Division? So, you know, if this is mitigation, it's a very narrowly focused, I should rather say, not narrow-minded, narrowly focused mitigation, which just affects a couple of streets, Clinton and Bonnie Bray. And, you know, I think this is not fair to the other people who have all the cars dumped on their street. So during the October 10 meeting, which I listen over and over again, there's been a lot of mitigation. We have to do mitigation. We are 35 years behind the mitigation. We have to mitigate, blah, blah, blah. And we look at our sister villages, and, you know, they've done mitigation, and we have not. So I looked, I Googled River Forest, and I'm sorry, I don't have a big poster. I Googled River Forest and Oak Park, which can also you guys can do on your computer. But just to show, on North Avenue, this is the River Forest, and this is Oak Park. So on North Avenue, the northern border, River Forest is about 2/3 of Oak Park, okay? So in Oak Park, as of today, according to Google, there are 17 streets. Oh, this is Oak Park, actually. There are 17 streets that go from North Avenue to the center of the city. And the River Forest, before they were closed, there were 10, which is reasonable. I mean, it's 2/3. So, you know, Oak Park did not close Lemoyne, did not close Greenfield, did not put any barrier on the 17th Street on North Avenue, didn't do anything of this. So how do they manage it? If indeed they are 35 years ahead of us, how do they do it? You're saying yes? You know
no,
how they
I'm,
do
I'm
it?
No, I'm listening to you.
Yeah. Did you know how they do it? They did it with speed bumps, with speed humps, with speed limits, and they did it with all those measurements that were suggested by the KLOA study, which is a professional study, and which, by the way, if you read it, I don't know whether any one of you has read the report, but if you read it, they will say that by closing all the streets as it has been done, this problem will arise in the other. So why don't we go back and do things as they should done? Although at this point, if you have already budgeted the whole thing, I don't even know whether there's a point. Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah. Yes, Stephanie, you're next.
Hi, Stephanie Peters-Mark again from 1401 Clinton Place. That's the corner of Clinton at Greenfield, 2 blocks west of Harlem. So I'm 2 blocks south of North and 2 blocks west of Harlem. A couple of things. First, I'm concerned that without a justifiable reason, the village has made a decision contrary to a study of professionals that we paid for. And if somebody does sue the village, I'm interested to know what the explanation will be for why we've put those barricades up. Number two, as someone else pointed out already today, no turn signs or don't turn during certain times of the day. Other areas I noticed past William, west of William, when I'm trying to turn into my neighborhood, when I'm, I guess, west of Harlem, and since I can't use my own street, Clinton or Bonnie Bray, I'm trying to turn further west. All of the signs say no turn, no right turn, no right turn, no right turn. I don't know, again, why we went from nothing to these extreme decisions that we just can't seem to understand are creating inconvenience. We think greater safety issues. We've almost been hit by someone speeding out of the alley. That had never happened to me before. Also, I am concerned about the speed with which emergency vehicles can access that corner of River Forest when every second counts. Even assuming the emergency vehicles know how to get there and are aware of all of these blockades that are actually preventing them from accessing us in the time of an emergency, it's going to take them longer to get there, just like it does me, multiple times a day. Finally, as multiple people have said before, including the people who are in support of these barricades, the traffic, the speeding on Greenfield, at least, is even worse than it was before. And I'm getting traffic backups. I'm going to show you guys more posters.
Mm-hmm.
This, an average Friday afternoon, this is Greenfield going toward Harlem. Backed up. Cars honking, turning off the street, trying to get out of this traffic jam. Someone coming south on Clinton. Someone continuing to try and speed up to the traffic jam, heading east on Greenfield to Harlem. The guy doesn't stop at the Clinton sign, almost runs into the guy on Greenfield who's trying to speed to get out of the neighborhood. I mean, I'm not following these cars all over the place. I don't know where they're coming from. All I can tell you is they're all on Greenfield right now. And although Mr. Lesniak said he doesn't see people playing in their yards and on the street, my children do that. And he and I agree that stop signs and barriers would be, speed bumps would be better than these barricades. But the truth is there are children, at least on Clinton and even on Lemoyne. And even Kate just said to me, oh, I saw your girls walking up the street with their stuffed animals going to their friend's house the other day. We walk up and down that street all the time. And so do other kids on the block. So, yeah, it's not just about kids. It's not about the people walking their dogs when it's still like dark out in the morning as it is now. It's just, if we're going to spend money on getting a professional opinion, there has to be a good reason why you decide not to follow it. Not just because the residents want it and want the reason, but because if the village gets sued, it's going to have a defensible reason. Okay, so if you're taking questions, the question is, you've heard it many times, why? And I'm not sure where we get that answer. Are you able to give us at least that much tonight, where we can get the answer as to why?
Yeah, as we talked about, I think the commission will be talking about it on Wednesday, if I'm correct, right?
Correct. Isn't it true that the commission recommended that the village follow the professional opinion?
I don't think so. A bit different, right?
You're just saying that will all come to us on Wednesday. The commission
what
will
vote?
Be able to reveal that.
What vote?
Correct. The minutes for that September 2022 meeting that we referenced, those are on the village website as part of the packet for the meeting. Sure. It would be as part of those minutes.
It should be part of
they
those
did
minutes.
Make recommendation. I don't believe that it fully followed the study at the time.
They recommend something different than what the study.
The recommendation is fairly similar to what the board ultimately adopted. Correct. That's September.
And this Wednesday, if we show up at the commission meeting, the commission will reveal to us what the thought process and reasoning was?
I hope it will be a nice discussion and discussion between the commission and yourselves and the concerned residents. I mean, I'm assuming many residents will show up for that conversation. So, I think they'll give you hopefully some explanation of the study and then their thoughts. Dana and Ross?
Hi again, I'm Dr. Shauna Novick. I own Novick Orthodontics on Clinton and North Avenue, 7351 West North Avenue. This is my husband, Rob Novick. Rob, how long did it take you to get to my office today?
An additional 15 driving around streets unnecessarily because of these barricades. also just them not doing what they're supposed to do. If it took me 15 minutes to get, what happens to a fire truck, an ambulance? Causing problems for businesses, gonna erode that corner of River Forest and all the businesses. It might driving down North Avenue as you drive through the city of Chicago. All the businesses are not gonna be able to operate. Not only causing problems for the residents, it's causing problems for the businesses is what helped drive community and help fund stuff within the community.
So. I specifically bought my location for the location, for the accessibility, for the convenience, for the parking. I own a business. And what this is doing is it's bottlenecking not only my business, but all the other businesses that are in this corridor. By bottlenecking us and with the amount of competition that small businesses like us already have to face, in this community, you know, it's a risk of losing these private-owned small businesses. And what you'd be left with are these big conglomerate corporate entities that are already making their way into this area. I don't know if it's something that most of you guys have really thought about, but the big picture of what we see on a day-to-day basis with the competition that we face is, you know, these corporate entities. And so do you want to give the people who live here options for their health care, for their dental needs, for et cetera, et cetera? You know, this area has already lost a very big, established, beautiful oral surgery practice to corporate. I cannot refer to that practice anymore. The quality of care is not there as I expect for my patients. We just lost an endo perio practice to corporate. Again, the quality of care, like the businesses that we are in this corridor, we are single doctor, private businesses, high quality, high touch. Do you want that as an option for the people of River Forest, or what's going to be left are these corporate conglomerates where, you know, you're just a number, the quality is just not there. So we're fighting to be here. We're fighting to, you know, people come to me because they don't want to go to Sears for their braces. So, you know, I want you guys to think about that, too, with these decisions. And I also want to know, you know, there was obviously some sort of decision or vote to have this put into place. When or where is the vote to oppose this? Because I was never even, I mean, not only me, but many of us, we had no idea this was even happening until the barricades were already placed. So now that you know, there was an open vote that people had a voice to put these barricades in place, I'd like to know when, where, how is there going to be an open vote to remove the barricades for those that are in opposition of this?
Yeah. So Doctor, as I said earlier, the commission will be meeting tomorrow, or Wednesday, excuse me, the 15th. And at that commission, the agenda item will be, you know, a discussion around, you know, the barriers itself and hear public comment. So I would say the 15th. Yeah, thank you.
Okay, no, I think we're going to close public comment. So if I can ask now, because we've got a few other items, a lot of items on the agenda. Okay, so if I can go ahead, the elected official comments and announcements, if maybe we can ask Trustee Buck.
I'd like to start with a land acknowledgement. As we begin, we are mindful that we hold these meetings on land that was once and still inhabited by Indigenous people, including the Ojibwa, Chippewa, Menominee, Potawatomi nations, and more. We will remember our nation's history and honor the Native people as stewards of this land that was colonized, and that River Forest continues to be a place many people from diverse backgrounds live and gather. Not too much to report. We had a lovely time a few days ago with the fourth grade Girl Scouts from Willard School, and they were learning about how government works. And we had officials here from different taxing bodies, and they interviewed each one of us, and it was a great time. A lot of the kids are very passionate about various topics, and that's really good to see.
Mm-hmm.
So, other than that.
Two things to report. I attended the Planet Green Leaders Lunch last Thursday with Seth. It was good to be with all the other leaders across the western suburbs, a lot of which are also involved in C4 Conference, and I should say the Greentown Conference, C4 Community Initiative. Still working on the C4 Conference. Thursday, June 22nd, if you can come. Thank you.
Great.
Thanks, Lisa. Okay. Good evening. I just have one item. It's just another friendly reminder that if anybody has any e-waste, you know, electronics, computer items, TV items, et cetera, the last day to register would be on March the 15th with LRS Recycles Company, which is the village's contractor. So you can go on our website and then just fill out the form, and then we'll follow up with you and schedule a date for the pickup. So,
nothing new to add. Thanks.
Okay. Thanks. I wanted to start out by saying I'm sorry I missed our last meeting. I had a late flight, which caused me to miss our meeting, but I did listen or try to listen to the audio of the meeting to understand what happened, and it was very difficult to follow the meeting based on the audio that we had recorded. Some of it was technical, I think, and Matt and I have already talked about, I know we're already upgrading the equipment, so that's super. Also, part of it was hard to follow because some people are not talking with either, we're not talking with our microphones on, or people like staff are answering questions from the audience without a microphone, or residents or other people are talking without the microphone. So if we want to hear, you know, like, even people who are listening live can't hear when people from the audience are talking without a microphone. Or if you want to hear the recording later and catch up on it, it's so hard to follow it. And, you know, I want to follow it if I miss my meeting, and you want to follow it if you miss the meeting too. So I'm going to try to notice that now, and if people are talking from the audience, I'm probably going to pipe up and say, hey, speak in the microphone, and that's why. Wanted to reiterate what Trustee Bachner said about the Girl Scouts being here. That was really fun. We had the police department cooperated as well, gave them a tour of the police department, and we had Trustee Bachner and Kathy was here, and a couple of library board members, and one of the questions that was asked of the Girl Scouts is, what would you do to change River Forest? And they gave us our answers, and they sent us home with some homework. I've tabbed a couple of interesting answers. One is that kids should be able to vote at elections. We should have French bakeries and free candy and ice cream. And then there were also discussions about cutting down on litter and not banning books. So that was an interesting day. And then reiterating what Rez had to say about the e-waste pickup, the deadline is on Wednesday at 5 p.m. I also wanted to mention that I got in the mail this week from the village an electric aggregation notice. Some of you might have received it also. It mentions that you can opt out or not for the MC squared electric aggregation program. I talked with Matt earlier today and asked that we update the village website with some more fulsome information, because having been on the Sustainability Commission and chaired it and worked on this project, even I didn't understand this document that said I couldn't figure out if it was a recommendation to do it or not and what the advantages were. It used to be that if you signed up for it, or if you didn't opt out for it, you got a break on your electricity costs. I'm not sure that that's still the case anymore, but the website says that we do. It used to be that the village gets an annual civic contribution. I'm not sure if that's still happening.
No.
So we need to give some better information to our residents and Matt on it, because we want to make the right decision. I want to make the right decision, and I don't know what to do here. And there's a deadline to opt out, which is 21 days from the date of when I receive my notice, which is March 8th. So,
yep. Yeah, just so clarification. I'm sorry. On that, we did pass a big ordinance on that whole discussion too, which I think included the portable piece, right? Remember that?
Yes, we did. What would happen is the first time we were able to get a charitable contribution, but MC squared, due to a lot of the economic factors, we were one of the last, we were probably the last municipality to be able to take advantage of the contract again, but unfortunately it was without the municipal donation.
Yeah.
So we had 2 years with the municipal donation, we have two without.
Yeah, and that was
but then the program ends.
Yeah, and that was all in the contract we approved.
So this says this electric aggregation program provides the village with an annual civic contribution. So it indicates that we still get it?
I think that we have to probably update that letter.
I just got it on March 8th. Anyway.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's confusing.
It's very confusing.
Point.
And it's always been confusing.
Right.
But you're duly noted.
Yeah. One more item about that. I don't know if anybody can answer it here or not, but I don't think all residents are on that program anymore, even if you didn't out, because I think MC squared maybe pushed people back to come on. I don't know.
Yeah.
If anybody has any information on that. I think I got a letter like that.
Yeah, we can discuss it. I mean, maybe Jeff at point in time we'll discuss it. I got my. I'm with MC Square.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then I wanted to mention I did give a presentation to the Lincoln Elementary Sustainability Echo Kids Club this past week, and they were having lunch at the time, and I thank the village staff for getting a set of the of the waste stations over there so that we could show them how to compost and recycle and the leftover landfill. But they didn't need much teaching because they were really on it. So that was neat to see. And then attended the One Earth Film Fest opening gala and some of their films. And that the Film Fest, which is based in Oak Park and River Forest, closed yesterday. Attended the Oak Park River Forest Museum Gala, where Jan Dressel, who was here at our last meeting, was honored as the heart of our village. And then the last thing I wanted to mention has to do with the traffic issue in the northeast quadrant of the village. My recollection was when we voted, put up those ballards at our October 10th meeting, that was a temporary measure. And I think I went back to listen to the audio of that meeting because of this that's been expressed, and I appreciate the concern. But my understanding is that our vote was to put those up temporarily and wait to see what our village-wide traffic study shows, and also see the effect of what happens when those temporary ballards are up. So my recollection when we voted is that it was not a permanent measure; it was temporary. That's all I have.
Cool. No. We'll let Jeff Blauster explain what the process was, but. Right. No, I agree with you. I mean, a budget, which we all. Bob?
So I only have two things tonight. Number one, I got to participate in the St. Patrick's Day Parade with Trustee Gillis and Phil up at the front of the line, so that was fun. We got out before the rain hit, but it was great. Our police department was represented, our fire department was represented, and it was a great day. So, and I want to wish everybody a happy St. Patrick's Day on Friday. Can't believe we got all the way around the table. I'm the first one.
Right.
And then I just want to address one thing on the traffic and safety meeting that's coming up Wednesday night. I'm just asking the residents to come to the meeting with an open mind, with a civil tone. Remember, these are neighbors who are volunteering to do this work on the for the betterment of the entire community. No one has an agenda. They're here to listen, and so please respect them and what the time that they're giving. They will listen to you. They will make recommendations, and they will bring those recommendations to the board. So I just ask you to please be civil and understanding of who you're dealing with, and again, their position is being volunteers. That's all I got. Thank you.
Thank you. Before everyone leaves, I'm going to ask, I mean, just so there's, because there is contradiction, the ordinance that we passed, which was voted on unanimously, was about the permanent barriers. I think what the discussion was to see how the effect of everything, especially at Greenfield and Lemoyne, you know, because that was more just, you know, one way going south. And then in our budget discussions, there was a budget approved for the permanent barriers. So I just want to make sure there's no confusion regarding what had happened. That's what happened. So what we hope to, we want to hear you. That's why we asked you to go to the commission and talk with the commission and hear from them, their thoughts around why they made those decisions, because they did give it a lot of thought. And then, you know, we'll take it from there. So we're not saying, you know, that we can't hear you. We want to hear you, but the process did happen, and the vote did happen, and the budget did happen. I just want to make sure that you're not confused, or nobody's confused about that, because that was voted on unanimously, and then the budget was voted on unanimously. We understand, and again, from Trustee Brennan, you're talking from there. Nobody can really hear it. It's not getting recorded, so I don't want to waste your voices. I want to make sure we hear your voices. So, go to the commission meeting. You know, sign up for public comment. I mean, you know, we're going to get through this process. I mean, this is not the, you know, it is a hard issue, but we want to get through it, and we want to make sure we do it right for everybody. So. That's what we asked you to do, but I just didn't want you all leave here, you know, confused about what did happen. Again, I want to qualify the budget. We did preliminary approve the budget, and what's coming up is the budget for next year. It was a preliminary vote. I mean, preliminary budget, right? I want to make sure I get it right.
It was presented as part of the capital improvement plan. There was a line item for making those installations permanent. That hasn't been formally voted on. That is part of the budget adoption that will take
in April. Right.
So, Kathy, I guess you don't want confusion, but I'm confused because when I went back to listen to that audio, you know, I specifically heard our discussion that, you know, we voted on it saying that we were just testing those out while we were waiting for the full study, that it was temporary, that we were going to be looking to see how it impacts the rest of River Forest, the traffic study, and then we'd be looking at it comprehensively. But I listened to my own voice say at that meeting, I clarified that these ballards, we were voting on these ballards on a temporary basis. And I voted on that saying that I think it's a good idea because then we'll get good information from the installation of these temporary ballards and from the comprehensive village-wide traffic study. Mm-hmm. So are we saying different things or the same thing?
I'm going to ask Jeff to, you know, and I don't want to put you on the spot, Jeff, but I think we got to get some clarity. I think what we added was the Lemoyne and Greenfield, which I thought was more the temporary.
I think the Traffic and Safety Commission had Lemoyne. So this will get recorded. So the commission, I believe, recommended Lemoyne and Harlem and the two cul-de-sacs off of North Avenue. I think the board added the location at Greenfield and Harlem.
Right.
To your point, President Ducey, the board action included ordinance measures, which were required even to implement the temporary measures. But obviously not having the permanent, or the budget for the permanent implementation meant we had to stick with the plastic barricades for the time being. But the ordinance, the ordinances for each of those locations were approved at that last meeting.
Right.
Part of the discussion, though, to your point, was that the upcoming village-wide study would also have a survey component to it, which is out, and I just checked 15 minutes ago. There are 819 responses so far. So part of that discussion was taking the village-wide survey, or the village-wide study, and the survey component and using that to inform any ongoing discussions about the Northeast improvements, because even though the ordinances were approved, it's not that we couldn't go back and change them if there's an overwhelming change in the sentiments of those implementations up north. So there was a kind of a drawn out component of that conversation that had to do with the village-wide study.
All I know is when the discussion prior to the vote and my discussion as I voted was as I stated. It was, you know, on the temporary basis. So it's interesting that there's the confusion now that.
So if
in
I
any
could,
event, it has to go
is
back
it that
to
it's
the,
been papered as
yeah,
permanent?
Exactly. So if I could just add to this. So the ordinance as approved doesn't refer to itself as a temporary ordinance, right? I think that it's the semantics of the way the law was passed. It's to add these blockages. But with traffic, as with just about everything a village does, it's all somewhat temporary because as people feel like they weren't heard, there are many times where someone comes in or a group of neighbors come in and they want something to change. And the board tries to look at it, does some due diligence and thinks, you know, that makes sense. But not everyone knew about it because no one was this was not a zoning matter. Notices didn't go out to everyone like it would if someone asked for a variation. It's just typical legislation that a local municipality would take from time to time. And the only public notice is the agenda. And so people who look at the agendas every time might see it, but most people don't because they work, they have jobs. And so the most people realize when something's changed by how it affects them. No one was hiding anything. It's just the way life is when you're living and you're working. And so now more voices are being heard. And so now the commission is going to take more information. And, you know, the budget is a process, too, and it hasn't been finalized. And so it was a final decision, but it's always open to reassessment and tweaking and adjustment. So.
And thank you, Lance. So all we're saying is I've cut public comment off. We were just trying to get more clarification as Trustee Brennan talked about. So I'm going to end that conversation. Go to the commission. I'm going to ask you to please go to the commission. I think they're looking forward to hearing everybody, and they know there's going to be a big crowd. So did we move the meeting? Is it going to be here?
The meeting will be here at 7 o'clock on Wednesday.
Okay, 7 o'clock here on Wednesday.
There is a Zoom link on the agenda for those wishing to participate
super.
Remotely.
And, you know, so we're trying to get it all out. And, yes, we want to hear everybody, and the commission wants to hear everybody in there. And we'll have more discussions around this for sure. I appreciate you all coming here and giving your opinions.
Will the Zoom link allow for people to give comments if they go through Zoom?
Correct.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Just to make sure.
Okay. Yes, there's a public comment on the agenda. We'll make sure to monitor those on the call to make sure they are available. They have the opportunity to speak.
Sure. Okay.
Okay. Thank you. And then, again, please come on the 15th. That's a good place to start. All right, so let me, for me, I just want to add to what Erica and Katie said. It was a great time to meet with the young women, and we basically, you guys, we just want to conduct our business. I mean, if you guys want to move out to the hallway, maybe that would be great. Thanks. But anyway, so it was great to visit with them. And then I also, just so everybody knows this, I met with the assessor, Kagi, on Friday, and he was updating myself and President Skaman from Oak Park about the triennial assessment that's coming up. So you're going to get a new property tax assessment, and it comes through our way. And this is a three-year triennial assessment. So make sure you look at your property taxes, and if you want to appeal, there's an appeal process. Just go through initially the assessor's office. They've got a lot of online opportunities or you can go to our River Forest Township assessor's office, Pam Kendi, as well, to get information on your property tax if you want to appeal it. Okay. So we'll go ahead and move on to our public hearing. We have a public hearing tonight regarding the lead service line plan. Well, I'm just going to open up the meeting to a hearing on the lead service line replacement plan.
In accordance with mandates from the Illinois Environmental Protection Agency, the village has submitted a project summary and preliminary environmental impacts determination for the purposes of lead service line replacement within River Forest. Pursuant to state law, the village is required to hold a public hearing on this plan. Notice of the public hearing was published on March 2, 2023 in the Chicago Tribune. The project summary and preliminary environmental impacts determination has been available to the public for inspection at the Village Hall in accordance with IEPA requirements. Invite the public to make any comments at this time. The board will consider final approval of the budget and plans for this project at a future meeting.
For anyone that want to speak regarding the lead service line, please go to the podium. Hearing no public comments or questions, I guess we'll close the public hearing. Way to do it? Okay.
Correct. All right. I just need a motion to close it.
Okay. Can I get a motion to close the public hearing?
Moved.
Trustee Brennan.
Yes.
Trustee Vasquez.
Yes.
Trustee Gillis.
Yes.
Trustee Bachner.
Yes.
Trustee O'Connell.
Yes.
Very good. Thank you. All right. So up is the consent agenda, item 6A through L. I can get a motion to approve 6A through L.
Motion to approve consent agenda items A through L.
Second.
Comments or questions on the consent agenda? If I can ask the clerk to please read the consent agenda and then take the vote.
Consent agenda A, Village Board of Trustee meeting minutes, February 27, 2023. B, accounts payable, February 2023, $1,666,928.53. C, finance report, February. D, administration department report. E, department reports. F, award of contract, 2023 street improvement project, Schroeder Asphalt Services, $355,936.80. G, award of contract, 2023 curb and sidewalk replacement program, Strata Construction Company, $61,897.50. H, award of contract, 2023 pavement preservation project, Dendler Incorporated, $48,262.50. I, award of contract, 2023 asphalt pavement crack sealing project, Dendler Incorporated, $45,900. J, award of contract, 2023 street patching program, Schroeder Asphalt Services, $94,135.15. K, award of contract, 2023 sewer lining project, Visu Sewer of Illinois, $127,578.50. L, Women's History Month proclamation. Trustee Vasquez?
Yes.
Trustee Gillis?
Yes.
Trustee Bachner?
Yes.
Trustee O'Connell?
Yes.
Trustee Brennan?
Yes.
Okay, very good. Thank you so much. Women's History Month. We didn't mention in our comments. Okay, so we have nothing on the consent items or 7, 8, or 9. So we'll move to 10, which is new business. And there's a 10A, which is the award of the contract for the Madison Street asbestos abatement. If I can get a motion and a second.
Motion to move to award a contract to Husar Abatement LTD in an amount not to exceed $51,719 and authorize the village administrator to execute a contract agreement subject to village attorney review.
So what I'll ask is either Jeff or Matt and to kind of talk through this, answer some of your questions. Debbie, I know
go ahead and explain the background. As the board and many of the people in the room know, when demolition began in early February, the contractors identified material that they believed to be asbestos. We hired a inspection company to come out and perform a demolition asbestos survey, and positive materials were identified. So a new survey was done for all the Madison Street properties. That is the information that was provided in the call for bids that went out for this additional work. I will say that on March 3rd, Hussar Abatement, the firm here, did remove the exposed pipe that was brought up at the last board meeting. Hussar also performed the abatement work as part of the original bid as a subcontractor of Anthem Excavation. This call for bids was an expedited timeline in order to make it reach the March 13th agenda. It was open for 8 days. We emailed approximately 20 contractors in Cook County, licensed contractors in Cook County, to let them know about the opportunity. We received a few inquiries. We only received two bids. It was a quick timeline, so it didn't have the opportunity for really many people to do a deep dive into it. So we did receive two bids, one from Hussar for $51,000 and the other from CEC Environmental for $76,000. The staff recommendation is to award the bid to Hussar Abatement. They are very responsive about the pipe. I've talked to their references that work with schools, a much higher standard for abatement work than vacant commercial properties, and received positive reviews. In terms of the other questions, when will work start? Cook County has to, once assuming approval from the village board, I'll work with Hussar or CEC to submit the permit application with Cook County. There's a few day turnaround and there's a 10-day notice period. So no sooner than 10 days from when that permit is applied for, which could be as soon as tomorrow. Once the work begins, the estimated time is at most 10 business or 10 working days for the abatement. In terms of when the demolition would begin after that fact, as quickly as possible. I don't have a timeline for that at this point, depending on the schedule for Anthem and their other subcontractors. The work for that is still estimated to be about 6 weeks over the two homes. In reference to the question for the permits for 10 and 11, Ashland, those demolition permits were never applied for. We were waiting for to get far along in the demolition of Madison Street, which didn't happen. So we have not applied for those at this time. The reason being because it expires after 30 days. So that is why we didn't do it at the time. Other questions? I'm happy to reschedule that meeting with the neighbors once we have an idea of when that work will resume. The third party firm, I should have mentioned this at the beginning, due to the concerns and the reality of finding additional asbestos that wasn't expected, the village has hired Northern Environmental Development to perform the third party oversight. They're licensed project management with the state, so this is one of their skill sets that's beyond abatement. So they will perform periodic site visits and testing, and there will also be a final report at the conclusion of the abatement. That final report, we won't start any demolition until that final report is received and reviewed with the county. In terms of other questions, I do not have a date for the Economic Development Commission meeting at this time. And in terms of third party for the demolition itself, the raw demolition, that won't be Northern Environmental. Their focus is environmental concerns rather than overseeing demolition projects, so that would be a different firm.
I furiously took notes when she was talking. Two more questions that I caught. One was stained glass status and the name of the site supervisor.
So in the stained glass, as of last week, I need to follow up with actually Lutheran Child and Family Services, express some interest in taking the windows back. Mm-hmm. I explained to them the situation and the fact that I didn't want the windows removed until this abatement work was completed to make sure the site was closed and secure. But I have not heard back. And then in terms of the site supervisor for Hussar, Aaron Sanchez is the individual who I've been working with on some of the other projects. And then Kevin Casey and Michael Casey are the Northern Environmental Development staff.
So it's Northern Environmental.
Thanks.
One thing, did you say this? Maybe I missed it. How long will the asbestos abatement take?
Up to 10 days.
Up to 10
working
days.
Yes.
Okay. Missed that. Okay, thank you. Okay, so think. Yeah. Okay, you can go. Yeah, please. Yes.
A quick time. I know you're being very good about timelines. The question is, with the alley tear up at that same neighborhood, is there going to be room for the dumpsters and the all the equipment and the people parking on the street and all this demolition at the exact same time is the question. Thank you.
Good question.
That's a good question. I don't believe it will have any impact in terms of the access or parking on the street. Fortunately, the Madison Street Lutheran Child Family Services has available surface parking for their employees that they've used to date. We'll make sure that that continues to be the case so it doesn't impact the already challenging parking in that area.
All right. Did you answer this as well? Who are the developers that Houseal is consulting with?
Sure. Be specific, as part of the Economic Development Commission work, reevaluating the zoning codes for the TIF districts. Part of the charge for Houseal and Levine was to speak with developers about what the market calls. I don't have the answer. I don't have the answer for that
right
at this time.
And then I think that's what was supposed to happen, I think, on talk about
correct
a couple of that.
So it's not necessarily developers that are working with on a specific project, but a gauge of input on what they're seeing in the area
market.
And what they would get in.
So,
I don't have those developers.
I mean, we can ask John for sure at the public meeting who he talked to. I think that would
yeah
probably be appropriate. Yeah, so the hope is on the 5th is to go through kind of a program by not only but zoning changes, but how potentially Madison and North Avenue could look. I mean, so there's applications, software applications that you can use in a 3D environment that kind of shows you, you know, what if it, you know, building was this tall or that tall or this small. It's a pretty cool thing, and I think he's going to present that, correct? Am I right, Matt?
Correct.
On April 5th. So if you've got time, I would, you know, tune in on that date if you got some time. Be interested in the kind of the things that are being recommended in the industry. So, okay. Any questions regarding the Asbestos contract that Matt and Jeff and others are bringing forward?
I have one request. If the board is done with discussion, I would ask that the motion be amended to waive the formal competitive bidding process. We did have a slightly shortened timeline for bidders.
I will amend my motion with that amendment.
Okay. If I can ask the clerk to please take the vote on this.
Trustee Gillis.
Yes.
Trustee Bachner.
Yes.
Trustee O'Connell.
Yes.
Trustee Brennan.
Yes.
Trustee Vasquez.
Yes.
Okay, so we'll move on to 10B, which is our stormwater master plan. And there's no motion here. So I guess, Jeff, will you be, or? Oh, yeah, Margie. Sorry. Oh, my gosh. Thank you.
I'm Margie Secunder, 531 River Oaks Drive. I wanted to talk about the Stormwater Master Plan, which I'm going to refer to as SMP. You will be asked for feedback on the SMP to ensure future efforts are aligned with board's goals. The board goals, I would think, would derive from residents' goals. Residents have no information on the projects, their scope, or their costs. In June of 2021, residents' requests, there were two resident meetings held for the vendors and staff to hear our resident inputs. No presentation was given, no framework shared, such as no rationale, history of flooding, why now, objectives, capital availability. Meeting notices were posted 2 days and 4 days prior to the two meetings. Very few notes were taken by the team. In fact, two people took one note each in the session that I attended. in 1 hour. No contact information on the team members was shared. A questionnaire was offered but pulled at the meeting's end. The participants stood for over an hour because the chairs had been pushed away. It felt as though those two meetings were more about checking the box. Residents offered input on the SMP. We've tracked the project for 22 months. We will be keen to see if our input is included. The reasons the West Side residents care is that the central sewers drain to the Lake Street sewer that drains west towards the river to discharge into MWRD, and those sewers on West Lake back up and into our homes and our basements. Christopher Burke, the engineer, the vendor, did the Northside Stormwater Management Project at a village cost of $18 million that discharges from Greenfield into the river upstream from the West Side residents. Another reason we care. President Deuce, you have stated repeatedly your support for transparency in our village government. I think residents should have information on the project, time to digest it, evaluate them, and give input to the board ahead of the board's direction on the SMP. Thank you.
Okay. Yep. This is the start of it. So, in terms of discussing the plan, I mean, this is a long-term plan. So, just because of the extent of the plan and the cost of the plan, so I'll let Jeff kind of kick it off and then tell us a little bit about the process, how you got here, Jeff, and then what do you see next?
Sure. So you're right. This is kind of step one as far as anything we have of consumable information. Up to this point, it's been largely data collection and kind of formulating what approach we think we need to take here. It takes a long time to model and get a picture of the entire sewer network and then how it reacts during various rain events. And then on top of that, now you're trying to kind of figure out conceptual project ideas for what we can do to supplement that. So that's where we've gotten to this point. It started because in 2020, we had some really substantial rain events that caused a lot of flooding and a lot of headache for a lot of people. So the board elected to fund a master plan so that all of our future efforts along the lines of stormwater are all headed in the same direction. So that's why we initiated this project as a municipality. We're finally at a point where we have some information to share. It's nothing that's ready for board approval yet. That's why there is no motion. This is a very preliminary discussion about some very conceptual just projects that are technically feasible, but there are big price tags associated with them. So obviously we want to come to the board. Happy to solicit input from residents as always along the way, but this is kind of conversation number one in terms of sharing information with everybody that is a little more understandable in terms of projects. So I'm going to introduce Jeff Jolkowski here in a minute. He is with Christopher Burke Engineering, the consultant who's been working on this project with us. Again, tonight we're just looking for feedback from the board just to make sure that next steps in the project are aligned with your goals. So with that, I'll bring Jeff up here to walk through a presentation, and then we'll take any questions that you have.
Well, good evening, and nice to meet all of you tonight. Kind of in line with what Jeff said, the idea tonight was to be kind of the first step and to give an idea of what we've been thinking and doing, and not so much an exhaustive list of everything that's happened to date. So let me just get into that. Can you advance it for me? What I like to start with is just to make sure we're on the same footing of understanding with terminology, right? So we talk about stormwater master plan. What exactly is that? What are we talking about? So this would be my definition, but it's a comprehensive look at your community's stormwater systems, and typically it results in a recommendation for a series of improvements that will achieve a desired level of protection from flooding. Basic definition. And I would say there's like three main parts to it. We do a sewer modeling piece where we look at all the sewer systems in the village, and we develop models of those. There's a capital improvement plan portion where we look at what projects would it take to improve that level of protection, and then what I'd call an administrative portion which we look at things like ordinance, recommending changes to the ordinances and different sort of non-structural improvements that could be made. And then in terms of goals, so we have the same understanding there. There can be different goals from a stormwater master plan based on coordination with the village staff. I'd say this kind of characterizes the goals that we've set, which is to create this village-wide model so that we can, bullet point number two, is to we can evaluate the current level of protection from basement flooding. Find that in a minute. So once we've evaluated that, if we have not met our desired level of protection, now let's develop that plan of what projects, what would it take, what would we need to invest in order to make that, to achieve that level. And then finally, that administrative portion to recommend ordinance changes and some other administrative processes that could be. In terms of definition, again, so we're on the same page. I say flooding, you may have a different thought of what flooding means. So, you know, there can be different types of flooding. So go ahead, next. You may have heard the term overland flooding. I would define this as, you know, we get these really intense rains, the sewer system can't handle it, water starts to pond on the surface, runs down to the lowest part of the street, and sometimes it can pond 1, 2, 3 feet deep and get high enough where it gets into someone's window well or doorway or something like that. I would call that overland flooding. We're fortunate here in the village that we don't really have many of those deep street flooding pockets where the water can really get that deep. So while this is certainly something that we keep an eye out for and we look for, it's really not a major concern in the village here. Yard flooding, I would say the difference here, yard flooding occurs when these low-lying areas, often in a rear yard setting, they just become inundated from runoff. So it's not an issue of sewer capacity. It's not because the sewers are backing up. It's just the rain on the ground. And that's something that we certainly considered as part of this process in terms of, you know, what impact would it have on the sewer system if we now tried to address that yard flooding. And our current thinking is that we're not making recommendations to address yard flooding as part of this stormwater master plan. Riverine flooding is something that you deal with here in the village. Obviously, you have the Des Plaines River here. So riverine flooding occurs when the river reaches flood stage, and then, you know, it certainly inundates areas adjacent to the river, and that has certain impacts on the community. So that is something that we're evaluating, not in the sense that we're going to be able to fix the flooding of the Des Plaines River, but in terms of how it impacts the village. And then finally, basement flooding or sewer backup, I'll probably use those interchangeably. This happens, you know, simply when, as you know, your house sewage drains out to the combined sewer in the street, your combined sewer community. So when it rains and the water level in the sewer rises, if it gets higher than your basement level, unless you have overhead sewers or some type of flood protection, you're going to get sewer backup. So this is really the primary focus of the village's stormwater master plan. So I mentioned sewer modeling. To be very brief, you know, I certainly spent a lot more time on the intricacies of sewer modeling, and I doubt you're interested. But as part of this process, we do create these computer models of the different sewer systems. We take a lot of different inputs from your GIS system to data we collect in the field to flows that we measure in the field, and we create these different models. And really, the purpose of them is to be able to evaluate what is your level of protection today. And from the figure, you can see there's like three main areas broken down based on just the layout of those current systems, where they drain, what contributes to them. So we've got a northern area, a big central area, and then the southern portion of town. So once we get those models put together, just in very simple terms, we simulate a number of different storms. So long duration, short duration, small amounts, big amounts of rain. And we just, at a very basic level, say how high does the water get in the sewer system? We use that to establish, you know, what is that level of protection. So since we have three different areas, we have three different sets of results. Before we get to the results, this is just kind of a simple way, you know, we need some way to portray what are those results simply. And so we're just going to do it by a simple color coding, where we code each manhole. Everyone knows what a manhole is. It's like the junction points in the street. You see the sewer covers in the street where the pipes come together. So when we look at it on a map, we plot all those points, and we'll give them a color. So green is good, red is not good. Green being if the water level in the sewer system is, say, in our example, more than 4 feet below the surface, we've got some comfort level that we're protected from flooding. If it's, as it gets closer to street level, we're more likely to have flooded basements. Where we're red, we're now within 2 feet of the street level, we're likely to have flooded basements there. So this is just kind of our color coding system to be able to pick those results to you. Just a few numbers, talk about level protection and storm events and rainfall amounts. Again, that can mean a number of different things. The first thing we do is to decide which duration of storm is most important to us. And since we're looking at the sewer system here, we do this by modeling, but we look at, how much rain do we get in a 1 hour time period versus a 12 hour time period. And it's those short, high intensity storms that really cause the most runoff and the most impacts to the sewer system. So for this study, everything we're looking at is the 1 hour storm. And this just gives you an idea when we talk about 1 year level protection or 2 or 5 or 10, how much rain we're talking about in that 1 hour, 1 hour time, somewhere between 1.3 and 2.4 inches. So I'd like to go through the results of those modeling just as far as determining the level of protection. And this slide shows the major portion, the central portion. And before we get to the results, just to give you an idea of sort of where things drain, the yellow arrows will show you that. So everything from Division Street kind of drains down to Chicago Avenue. And then that yellow line is at Oak Avenue. And from there, it drains north. That's sort of very true. In that area, it's very traditional combined sewers. Every street's got, you got the street grid. They're pretty much all the same size combined sewers, small pipes, 12 and 15 inch, very consistent. South of Oak Street, can you go back? South of Oak Street actually drains to Lake Street, and that's a little bit different. There is some interconnection between the two. And in that Lake Street area, there are some relief sewers, which help. If you can see in the blue lines there, there's some relief sewers that drain through the area that supplement the capacity of the combined sewers. So when they start to get backed up, they can access these relief sewers and provides relief. So there's a little bit different results in the two different areas.
What do you do?
Sure.
Can I ask you a question?
Sure.
Sorry to interrupt, but on Division Street, you see those yellow arrows.
Yeah.
I just wanted to be clear. Are you saying everything's from Division down or all the way from North Avenue?
From Division Street is the break. We're
okay.
North of Division, it drains up towards North Avenue. South of Division, it drains down towards Chicago Avenue.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So this figure shows the results for a 2 year storm. And you recall, green is good, red is not good. So, right. And not surprising, maybe it's surprising to you, it's not surprising to us from a stormwater perspective. Like I said, you've got very small diameter sewers out there. In that central area, I mean, that's four or 500 acres of land that needs to drain through these pretty small diameter pipes. So it doesn't take a lot of rain to surcharge the system. So this figure would indicate that unless you've got overhead sewers or some type of basement flooding protection, you're going to be at risk for flooding for most storm events. And then south of that yellow line there on Oak, the results are a little bit different because of that relief system. So as you get west, really it's where you're in proximity to that relief system. You've got some greens and yellows there where you've got a little higher level of protection where I would say you're in the 2 to 5 year range as opposed to the 1 to 2 year range. So this slide shows the most southern part of town, and a little different situation here. It's a smaller, it's not nearly the same size, which helps. We actually have larger sewers here for some reason, and you have also a relief sewer network that's a little bit more established here. So this picture is actually the results are for a 10-year storm, and you can see we've got a variety of colors, right? You've got green, yellow, red kind of scattered throughout. May look random, but it's really, if you look at it, it's based on the proximity to the relief sewers. So if you're close to those relief sewers, you have a higher level of protection than if you're further away. So in the southern area here, our level of protection varies in that 2 to 10 year range. Okay, so the third area then is the north. I've got a figure on the next slide, but why don't you go ahead and go to the next slide. It's a little bit different or difficult to characterize the results here. You know, we did the sewer separation there, and so we've removed a lot of that drainage from the North Avenue system. We still have the phase two of that, so basically the areas closest to North Avenue still continue to drain there. The North Avenue interceptor has the potential to back up into the neighborhood. So those, we still have risk of flooding from North Avenue. However, at each one of the village's connection points, we have these what we call backflow valves that prevent that backup from happening. So while we have protection, you know, it's a mechanical protection, and there's still some risk of flooding based on the levels in the North Avenue. So that's kind of a snapshot or a big picture of the results of this, the modeling and the level of protection termination. You know, they're not the same everywhere, but generally they're well below, I'm calling it desired 10-year level protection. That is sort of an industry standard to have a 10-year design for sewer systems. We would hope to have at least that minimum level protection. So the next step in our process then was to, once we said, all right, obviously we don't meet that level today, what would it take to get there? So we've, and this is an ongoing process, but we've started the process of identifying the types of projects, you know, what sorts of things can we do and what would they cost, just to give you an idea of, you know, where the study is going. So I'd like to walk through those now. So these are the potential improvement projects starting in the south. And this really is an expansion of that leaf sewer network that already exists. So all the pink lines would be extensions of that relief sewer network that would all take water away from the combined sewers, take them to the relief sewer, mm-hmm. try to minimize the water that's going through the combined system and has the potential for backing up into homes. This type of project would lend itself to being implemented over time through maybe like a streets program, because you've got a lot of different segments on lots of different streets. But it certainly could be built out that way. Yeah, the price tag on this, an estimated cost is of around $7 million in today's cost. Going back up north, obviously you've already invested a ton of money up there, but we would still recommend completion of the phase two of that project, which is kind of in the not grayed out portion of this figure here. All those red lines would be new separate sewers that would connect to the storm system that we already built. So when that were to happen, really the only thing left contributing to North Avenue would be strictly sanitary flows, which would greatly reduce the risk to backup from the MW. That project was designed back in 2013, obviously for bid or constructed. So we've updated those costs to current costs. And so this project here would be in the Lake Street area, Lake Street system, kind of the southern part, the central system. And this is actually kind of a little bit different in that we don't have a ton of sewer work, but we're trying to take advantage of one of the very few open space opportunities that we have. Typically, when we do these studies, the first thing we look for is where are the parks, where are the public open spaces, where we might be able to put in some type of stormwater facilities. And, you know, we simply don't have very many of those opportunities. So one that we obviously saw was Keystone Park here. And the thought of this project would be to put in underground storage under the park. So these are, I don't know if you're familiar with them, but concrete vaults, they're sort of modular, almost like hollow Lego block type systems that go together, kind of end up with a concrete vault that can store water under the ground. Put one in a Keystone Park, and then we'd also probably need one at Franklin Avenue within the right-of-way. And the idea would be we would relieve the relief sewers. So we would have, when the relief sewers get full, we would have a place to store that water underground, that they can then, the relief sewers can relieve the combined sewer network better than it currently does today. So this particular project would achieve that 10-year level of protection that we're looking for in the Lake Street system at a cost of about $9 million. So obviously those are,
you know, those aren't small numbers in terms of costs, but we still have this rather large area outlined in red here in the central portion. That is a very challenging area for us. Large, it's 400 to 500 acres of drainage that we would need to deal with. There's very few open space opportunities. Right now, it all drains to an MWRD outfall, which is unlikely to change as far as the capacity into that outfall. And if you're thinking in terms of, well, if we separated it, I mean, that's a long way to go to separate that water. It's a lot of sewer that would have to be put in. So we obviously need to address that area. So the next two slides, I'm calling feasibility projects, not recommendations, but just to give you an idea of really of the order of magnitude of the sort of scope that we're talking about it would take to address those areas. So as I mentioned, if we were to maintain a combined sewer system, we have to maintain our outfall to MWRD, which has essentially a fixed capacity. So we want to increase our protection level. We need ways to hold water. So in this scenario, we'd have to do that in the street grid, underground, using vaults. You can see the extent of what you would need to do to get just that 10-year level of protection. You're basically on the street grid, we'd have that type of vault system on all those north-south streets in order to be able to hold enough water so that we don't get that level basin back up. Obviously, that's a very large price tag, $80 million, and it would, in today's cost, and certainly this would take, a long time to projects like that.
So I understand. Is this a suggestion that we construct under street vaults?
Correct. The only opportunity, since there are no open space type opportunities, any improvements we do are going to need to be within the street grid, within the right-of-way. So this concept would be of our north-south streets, we put in these storage vaults under the road. It essentially would be very large sewers so that they would have the ability to hold water more than the MWRD system can. But when it can't take the water, it's got a place to back up rather than people's basement. So this is I'll call it a feasibility concept, assuming that we maintain a combined sewer system.
And by the way, this $80 figure would be in.
Right. This just addresses this area, the central portion. Yes. Next slide. So you might say, well, if we're going to do all that, why wouldn't we separate the sewers? And I would probably agree with you. But that's also not a small or an easy project. So all the red lines, basically the entire street grid would need new separated sewers, new storm sewers. A lot of storm sewer work. You still need to go a ways to get to the river, west of the neighborhoods. And it's got a slightly smaller price tag. But again, that $67 million in today's cost would take many years to. So obviously those are just thoughts. The central area is certainly recommending we immediately pursue with an $80 million project, but just to get across the idea of the order of magnitude that it would take to get that level of protection through, I'll call it infrastructure improvement. So in terms of our next steps, our intention tonight was to, put this out and to just for your awareness and to respect, certainly incorporate any of that. We have work remaining on the administrative issues as far as ordinance recommendations, things like infrastructure, things like a backflow prevention subsidy program, which, maybe that makes more sense in some of those areas where we can't feasibly provide an infrastructure recommendation. Those types of work remain to be done, and then obviously so that's our sort of high-level look at where we're at today. Certainly open to questions or whatever you'd like to.
Questions from I just want to just add on is when we decided to look at a full village stormwater plan, it was for just that reason, to be transparent with what our sewers look like. I mean, many municipalities don't do this. We did.
we did it because we wanted to be transparent and show you what the issues were. But, I mean, the good news is it doesn't sound like there's, other than maybe some immediate needs, there's some things that we have to plan for maybe sooner than later.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's just looking at the drainage areas, the size of the watershed, and the size of the right. network, I'm surprised there's not more of those overland flooding issues. But I think you're just fortunate in the topography happens to be, a lot of towns have these, you know, you see the road kind of dip and you've got this area where the intersection is 3 feet below the streets,
yeah.
Rather below the houses, and water ponds there tend to have good routes to the river where the water doesn't flood on the surface so much. Self can't handle it.
I just have a question because ultimately, you put up the, here's like, the thing that we probably should do in terms of if you think about underneath our streets, using them as a repository for water. Mm-hmm. Like, and I know that you're saying for this part of the village, this makes the most sense. But if you were like, would it make sense ultimately to do that sort of approach for everything, even though I know the price tag would be totally like astronomical?
Well, I think that comes down to what's the level of protection that you want. And if the goal is, so let's say we don't want to have basement flooding for a 10-year storm, I would say that's not the most economical way to do it. I think the other ways that we're outlining mm-hmm. here to utilize the infrastructure you have to the best and to supplement it would be a more economical way.
So I have a question. So you do all this stuff, and somebody has to receive this water. So what's the capacity of MSRD as you lay these projects out mm-hmm. and you say it's here now, it's got to go somewhere else? Are
right.
they going to be
right? So none of these have new connections or upsides or really any change to the way MWRD receives water. That's really a constraint that we have to work with. So where we're looking at, for instance, the Lake Street project, we're just putting in a bunch of large areas to hold water because we know we can't release it any faster. So no, the answer.
So I mean, even approach this then. If you go to them and you say we want to do the smallest of these projects, and they say, well, that's great, but we got no more capacity.
No, what I'm saying is that these projects would not increase the water that goes to them. We're not trying to send more water to them. We're acknowledging that we can't, and so we need to
okay.
be able to manage it within our footprint.
This is really about creating storage in River Forest.
Right.
Rather than
right.
people's basements, yeah. we'd have bigger pipes to right. hold the water, and then it slowly releases back into MWRD when they do have capacity.
Right.
There would be no additional. This is all water that's still going to MWRD.
Okay.
We're just
okay.
we're keeping right. it at bay a little bit longer.
Thank you for the presentation. I noticed that we're talking about 1, 2, 5, 10-year level protection. Mm-hmm. When we have talked about this before, we were talking about 25, 50, 100-year level protection for storms. And I think that the issue with rain and flooding is going to get worse before it gets better, and we're going to see more 25-year storms. And so I'm considering, I want to know about those as well. And what that cost would look like. So are you saying that what you presented today, if we were to do all those things, instead of red, it would be green in your
storms?
Correct.
Storm? Correct. Yeah.
I think that we need to plan. If we're doing something so major, we have to think decades out. And I have a sense that we'll be looking more at 25-year storms becoming the norm. Regular basis.
I guess what I would add to that is there is a limit to what's feasible to be done within the sewer system. That's why we typically have that 10-year, that's a typical design level. Beyond that, I mean, you could even have the debate as to whether it makes sense to address the issue of basin flooding through public infrastructure or through private, reliance on, overhead sewers and flood control. Beyond the 10-year level of protection, I would certainly say it's more feasible to get that level of protection through.
So So for a 25-year level of protection, you're saying that we would have to start looking up rather than down?
I'm saying in order to have protection from basin backup, we would need to keep the water level low enough below the road. And for a 25-year storm, that would be very difficult. So each home should have its own flood control, meaning an overhead sewer system or a check valve or a backflow preventer of some sort that can, stop that backup from happening. In the perfect world, every home would have that, and that sort of happens, you know, naturally over time through redevelopment and through teardowns, through current public building codes, plumbing codes that didn't exist when these homes were originally built. So as that happens, you'll have more and more homes that are protected, even though the water level in the sewer system is at the street level.
Jeff, on that projection, the level of protection, the bulletin 75, that's a more updated level of what storm is as opposed to what people traditionally think before.
Yeah, that is true. So, yeah, 2 years ago recently, the State Water Survey updated their rainfall statistics. So what we used to call a 10-year storm is now like a 2 or 5-year storm. So the previous study had been done based on data from the 80s prior. And so now they've updated with another 30 years of rainfall data. And to no one's surprise, it showed that, you know, the storm events are getting more intense and your storm is now larger than it used to be.
My thought is, how quickly is that information going to change, too?
You gave us some good information about different sections of town and different proposed resolutions for each section. I didn't quite capture whether you've given us an assessment of which area of town is at the highest risk of the worst type of flooding. Where's our priority?
If that slide, you go back, you're going back to the central area, the results. That's certainly
the 6.9.
That is back. There you go. This basically from Division Street to Oaks, that whole area is really undersized, does not have any relief sewer. So there's completely reliant on this pipe in the street, which is only 12 inches in diameter, to carry the storm water from that whole, all those blocks to the north of it.
So Division to Oak and from...
The width of the village. Correct. Right. So the question is that different? Well, they're all red for, they're all not meeting the criteria for the 2 years, so they're certainly going to meet it for the five, not for the five or the 10.
So this is a higher priority because more susceptible.
I'm trying to pick the level
storm
protection.
Is a lower.
I'm trying to pick the level of protection in each area. So for the central, it's certainly two year storm or less. If you go, we started here. Go forward a slide. So for the south, I showed you the 10-year because even for the 10-year, we do have some areas that meet that criteria that are some green dots.
Green dots.
Are we going to have this slide deck available on the Village website?
This slide deck, I didn't want to put it up before this presentation, but it's already in the queue to get posted. There's a project page on the website. It'll be posted tomorrow on that website.
Thanks.
Everything we do gets posted. Everything we do. Any other questions for Jeff?
I mean, generally, the direction, thank you, that we're headed here, aside from looking at some potentially more higher magnitude weather events, or any feedback, this is ridiculous. We think this is too much. We want to head in a different direction with this. We just want to make sure, again, that the rest of this project is in a direction that is aligned with what this board wants to do. Not a small task, and I want to make sure we're starting off in the right direction.
Well, it's a sort of a loaded question, Jeff. I will say that I see the severity of the problem, but then how are you going to, are you going to propose a phase in? Are you going to propose the financing at the same time? How is this going to work is what I'm saying. That's a lot of money to do. We're not going to tear up all the streets at the same time.
Certainly
so,
not.
Yeah. So I guess that's what I need to know more so I could get some comfort level.
I think we have to, chicken or the egg, I guess. You know, it's hard to figure out the funding mechanism if we don't know what the total cost is that we're looking at. But by the same token, I can appreciate the reverse is also true. I think it's probably, I think it would make most, the most sense to establish the scope of work that we want to create, whether that takes 10 years or 50 years. I think it would help to know that we've established the scope of work and that's the direction we're going in. And then along the way, these projects would have to be split up 12 ways from Sunday, given the scope of it all. Mm-hmm. Along the way, we find whatever funding mechanisms we can through MWRD, through state funding, through loans, anything we can do to fund individual split projects, because every one of these would be split up.
Okay. And well, maybe what I'm thinking of is what would be the worst, meaning how far can you spread this out? I mean, 10 years, 20 years, 50 years.
Run it out as far as you want, right?
Well, I'm just saying that. No, but realistically, you know, when you do work, you paint the house and you can't spread out 100 years because you know the side of the house that you paint is going to need painting even before the 100 years is what I'm getting at. So realistically, if we're going to do this, what would be the outlying period that you can phase this out?
To be honest, and you can jump in too, Jeff, if you have other thoughts, but the existing sewer network that we have has been in the ground for decades and decades and decades. So that is the scenario we're in already. Any additional piping we put in provides additional storage. It's a net benefit. So, and I'm kind of joking about 50 years, but it very well could be 50 years, depending on what scope of work we choose here. Anything we do over the course of those 50 years is going to improve the situation. How fast we want to go about that is going to depend on the funding and all those other factors along the way.
Right. So since it's going to be split up, is there, and you know, again, is there a strategic, are there strategic points in the system that we should address?
Right.
So for example, I'm just going to pick intersection. So at Lathrop and Division, is that an intersection? Keystone and Chicago Avenue, is that an intersection? Are there those points in the village that we could kind of use as safeguards as you kind of roll out the program and decide how it's going to work over what could be a 50-year period of time?
Right. I think you probably attack that no different than we did the north side sewer separation, where you attack the trunk line first. And then, you know, if that's the first project, now we can start to align projects based on, well, we have to resurface this road. So let's go put that kind of finger in first, and then we resurface it, and we can pick and choose because we've got a trunk.
The dike thing, aren't you?
There you go. So, yeah, again, but until we establish that we want to do that entire scope of work, it's hard to start strategizing how we go about that. Certainly there would be some strategic elements to that. Absolutely.
I'm sorry. I was just going to say, I mean, I recall the Chicago Central area being like the real burner. So is that the area that should be done first and then spread out from there?
Well, unfortunately, that's the area that, you know, has that $80 million price tag. So if that's something that you committed to doing, yeah, I think that would make sense to start there.
Okay.
I suppose that's a matter of evaluation. Maybe it would make more sense because you know you're not really going to get the benefit until you've spent a good amount of money to start separating those areas or however you want to address that. Whereas, for instance, in the south, a smaller number could get you protection for a larger area. So yeah, there would be some evaluation to be done there, but what would make the most sense.
Jeff, do we have to consider state-owned roads?
Lake Streets really would be the only hurdle in this context.
Chicago's not?
Yeah. Chicago's not. Division is not. Lake Street, Madison, North Avenue, Harlem, and then Thatcher and Chicago west and north of Thatcher at Chicago. So Lake Street, from an east-west standpoint, Lake Street would be the only hurdle. We dealt with some of that with Harlem on the North Side Sewer project and permitting thing that you have to go through, but it was not an issue.
So I'm going to take your bait. question and say that I think this is absolutely necessary. We have to do this work, and please move forward with it, is my opinion.
Thank you.
I say I want to hear more before we.
Yeah. Right.
So I just have one more thing.
Yeah.
Like, and this is actually just thinking about, yes, this is a big part of it, like stormwater, you know, sewers, big pipes under the ground and that kind of thing. But is this usually part of a lot, like, are there other programs that we should do in parallel, like really work hard on more permeable surfaces in the village? We are actually have a lot of people building bigger homes, which is actually decreasing the amount of permeable surface we have, putting more water other places. The whole, I know we already do the backup sewer program, don't we?
This is one of a
five-pronged approach. I don't know what it is.
I think you're bringing up an absolutely great point, and that is, I don't think the sewer can stand on its own. I think your point is there's other, you know, we talked about the backflow, but we also talked the overhead drainage. I mean, that many of the homes are already putting that in.
Sure.
As you said, as they upgrade or remodel or whatever, green initiatives are going to help. So you're right. It's a multi-prong approach. But I don't think they're mutually exclusive, all of them. I think you have to do them all.
Right.
You got to do them all.
And those are, just to clarify, and Jeff did mention this, those are very much still a part of this stormwater master plan.
Right.
It's just not part of where we're at yet. We wanted to make sure this was set. We will come back at a future date to talk a little more detail about these projects, but also some of the things that we've looked into, staffing levels, ordinance changes to maybe put some more responsibility on new construction, the subsidy program, do we need to increase funding levels? Sewer lining, do we need to increase funding levels for that? So there are multiple other elements that we're also looking at as part of this project.
I ask, I'm sorry, Russ.
No,
do we
go ahead.
Do we have any sense, does anybody know, in terms of like property values, what this will do for property values, flooding insurance, are there any areas in our community that like won't get flooding insurance because it's bad right now?
No. The village does participate in the National Flood Insurance Program. So our residents who do have flood coverage do get a discount on their premiums based on the requirements that the village does have in place. I think we get a little more of a deal because we just updated the building code. So that program has more to do with like building codes and elevations of where your windows can be if you're in the floodplain and things like that. I don't think that there would be elements of this that would apply to that, but there also, to my knowledge, there are no areas in town where people just can't get coverage because of the flood.
Are there any areas in the village now that are in a floodplain?
I'm sorry, say that again?
Are there any areas of the village now that are in a registered floodplain?
There are, yeah. We have one pocket of floodplain at Chicago that kind of creeps across at Thatcher and just east of Thatcher a little bit, and then another one down by Lake Street, River Oaks, Auburn, that area is in some the floodway and floodplain creep in that way as well.
But I don't think. And I mean, if you've got, you want more public comment, or you've got a question that you want to. Okay. Well, again, Trustee Brennan said you can't. So if you don't mind using the.
Sure. I'm sorry, I stepped out. Is it Jeff?
Yes.
So your analysis looks at up to 2.4 inches of rainfall in 1 hour, 1.3 to 2.4. I'm guessing you looked at it for 2022 because you couldn't. There wasn't enough rain coming that year.
I can hear you, yes.
So anyway, my point is, if you looked at 1 hour rainfall and you state the vulnerabilities in a region based on 1 hour rainfall, we should also consider catastrophic rainfall, whether that's over 12 hours or 24 hours, like occurred in September 13th of 2008. What are the vulnerabilities to areas based on catastrophic rainfall? And one last point, your last scenario on Chicago Avenue in Augusta, your scenario is separating the sewers and dumping into the river. Again, that's upstream from West Side residents. That would be a concern for the Sustainability Commission as well, I think.
I
I guess I addressed the comment about the catastrophic storm. The reason, so those are the storms that I put in the table there, are because those are the ones that we're presenting. Because we look at not just the 1 hour, but we look at a number of different durations. Those short duration storms are the ones that produce the greatest basement flooding, greatest flooding in the sewer system. So a 10-year level storm that falls in 1 hour is going to produce more flooding than one that falls in 12 hours. There's different depths of, or different total amounts, but the ones where you've got, you'll have less rainfall, but because it falls in a short amount of time, it actually has flooding associated with it. Mm-hmm. So that's how we go about establishing which storm do we look at. The 2022 has nothing to do with it. It's just 2.4 inches in 1 hour. It's a like a hypothetical storm. It's not an actual storm from 2022. That is something that it can impact the system, but certainly in like that central portion of town, that area will back up regardless of what's happening. It ends up in. So the pipes in the street themselves are just much too small to handle the water.
Thank you. Maybe one of the things I can recommend, and I don't know, Matt, maybe you can weigh in here, is that this is just the start of the conversation. Mm-hmm. And I again, this is how we have to get there. We're trying to just show what's happening in our village and some of the solutions. So maybe what we do is, can we have a couple of community meetings just to present the plan mm-hmm. and get feedback about the plan itself, and then try to, you know, massage it to a point of priorities and strategies and kind of what you're trying to go, what's the direction? It would be nice to see what everybody's thoughts are out there in the community. And I think this is doable. I don't want anybody to say, oh my gosh, you know, we're under big distress. I mean, every community is facing the same rainfall. We are, at least around this region. So, but this is just thinking ahead for all of us. Right. This is what we ought to be doing around this table, is thinking ahead for our community 50 years from now, as Jeff said, not just. So, I don't know. That's just a thought to move the conversation along.
I'm just thinking out of the box. I have a neighbor who actually put these storage tanks in her yard because of flooding, and they haven't had flooding. I understand the issues is because we're planning, and I understand we cannot invade in people's private yards. But I see that if we're going to tear up streets, it's going to probably cost the taxpayer something, versus is it cheaper to do something and, like, offer, hey, can we put these storage tanks in people's yards, so to speak, if they have a yard? I mean, I have a yard.
Isn't that what we do already? Don't we offer a rebate or a pay percentage
for storage?
Storage. I'm talking about, like, the storage tank.
You're talking about the municipal size tanks.
Well, whatever size you can afford to put, well, not afford in terms of money, but in putting in space.
I can clarify, we don't have any kind of program for putting in storage in private property.
I'm
and
just
again,
saying we're looking at $80 million plus. So I'm saying, is it cheaper to put in these storage tanks, convincing our residents, hey, if you have a yard and you can put the storage tank, or we can do it, cost, is it cheaper to do that than ripping up the streets and putting in the sewers? And I'm looking at
keep in mind, though, this Stormwater Master Plan, I can remember this started long enough ago where Eric Palm was involved. I can remember a discussion with him about the rear yard flooding, which is still an issue. So if we were to start doing things and subsidizing or paying for outright storage in people's yards, now we're addressing the yard flooding, which is a separate issue, but not necessarily, it's going to be harder to connect that hydraulically to the sewer system in the middle of the street.
Okay, well,
be the feasible. And I appreciate, where you're coming from. I just think there are some different technical issues that would come with that.
Because it's really not only about water flowing off the houses. It's the water that flows off of driveways and into the street and, you know, parking lots and all the rest of the areas that you have to figure out also. You know, I don't know how you separate that out. But
I just remember, and I'm not going to point at anybody's residence, when they had the flooding, they just connect the pumps and they pour it all from their yard to the street.
Well, sure.
And so you see that. And I'm just trying to think of something else. That's all.
Well, yes, and again, I don't think any ideas are off the table.
Yeah,
I mean, that's how I look
I'm just
at
trying,
it.
Yeah, if anybody
so
else comes
I would say
up,
all ideas are good at this point.
Yeah. But I agree with you with having those.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Nice job. That's another.
Okay.
Oh, that's a great point. All right. So I think, thank you, Jeff. We really appreciate you giving the presentation. And then our Jeff. I think the direction is let's just have a on this and coalesce all the information as we need to, and then come back and we'll keep talking, keep going through this and doing what's right for the community again for the next 50 to 100 years.
Thank you.
All right. So so that ends our regular scheduled meeting. We do have executive session issues, so end it and then move into executive session. So
need
if I
can
motion. Get a motion.
Motion to enter executive session pursuant to 5 ILCS 120-2C2 to discuss collective negotiating matters between the public body and its employees or its representatives. The village board will adjourn after the executive session and will not return to open session.
Second.
Trustee Brennan?
Yes.
Trustee Vasquez?
Yes.
Trustee Gillis?
Yes.
Trustee Bachner?
Yes.
Trustee O'Connell?
Yes. Plumbing issue, can I call for a 1-minute recess?
Yeah, go for it. Yeah, we'll take a